the three things that Christianity has added to our understanding of person are grace, the incarnation, and the church. Exclude these dimensions from the training or formation of a person, and you have distorted rather than developed his personality. Include these ideas, and you have helped the person. So we ask a series of questions. What does the mystery of grace add to the understanding of person as known to the unrevealed human mind? What does it tell us? It tells us that each human being has a second and higher life infused into him by God than the already sublime existence conferred on him at the moment of conception. In other words, we should not only speak of our supernatural life conferred on humanity, but of a superpersonal individuality conferred on each person the moment we receive the divine life of grace into our already unique human spirits. In other words, just as God creates us from the first moment of our physical existence different, distinct, separate, unique, which makes us this person and no other, so the moment he confers sanctifying grace, the life that he infuses into A is not precisely identical with the divine life he infuses into B. A few days ago, we celebrated the Immaculate Conception of Our Lady. Now, she had the unique privilege of receiving both her physical, natural life and supernatural life at the same time. But Mary was a distinct person, not only naturally, she was a distinct person, and for her from the first moment of her bodily conception, also supernaturally. We are different, not only because each of us has a different individuality naturally, but because the grace that is infused into us at baptism is not precisely the sanctifying grace that God infused into someone else. Our personality, transformed, as we've just described it, by grace, is individuality twice over. In other words, if the essence of personality is individuality, being separate, distinct, different, unique, we are different, distinct, and unique twice over. Once because we have our own distinctive, separately created soul, and who would doubt that our bodies are different? We have different parents. And even though we may be members of a larger family, our brother or sister, they were conceived at a different time than we. So we have, first of all, a personality which is unique naturally. And once again, we are different individuals because we have our own distinctive, separately conferred soul of the soul, anima anime, that I keep using. In other words, sanctifying grace. What could be more obvious? Now, the sanctifying grace that God conferred on the soul of Mary was not the same kind of sanctifying grace as we received when we were baptized. Obvious. What is less obvious? That the measure of grace, the kind of grace, the expectations of grace, in a word, the uniqueness of our supernatural personality makes us different from others, not only as human beings, but as children of God. One practical consequence of this very important thing I'm describing here is that in teaching or directing others, we should recognize both forms of individuality in them and help to develop, now watch this, help to develop both simultaneously. In other words, at the same time, at the risk of producing what we might call spiritual schizophrenics, where one part of a personality, which makes them individuals, can be cultivated and developed while neglecting the other part, the supernatural. And one result is that we have now the spectacle of graduates from nominally Catholic institutions leaving school as cultured, educated agnostics. Or speaking to religious, we have religious trained, formed, take their last vows, finish whatever terminal degrees they get, and are religious only in name. Brilliant, articulate, leadership qualities, but infants in the spiritual life. This is such an important thing that I thought I'd spend a little more time on this matter of grace. A person's autonomy, as we saw, is part of his individuality. Each one of us is not only is a different person. We act like different persons. I could close my eyes. All I'd have to do is hear the shuffle of feet coming to breakfast, and I can tell you who's sitting down next to me. There are some people never sit down to breakfast. This is my own Jesuit brethren. God bless them. Never just sit down to breakfast. Before they sit down, they pick up the sugar and the milk, and stockpile whatever they need in front of their plate. Then they're ready to sit down. That's the ritual. And they're doing it for 30 years. Now this we have known from reason, from the memory of men. But while we know that to develop a person's autonomy, you must train the will, at the same time, what we could never have figured out from reason alone, that it's not enough to develop strength of will. This will must be enlightened by grace, supported by grace, enabled by grace, to do things that reason alone could never conceive, or the free will alone could never achieve. The bottom line of what we're saying here on the level of grace is that in the formation of those under our care, we dare not divorce the role of divine grace from the cultivation of a free, autonomous individual. That would be to deprive a person of the individual's greatest assets in the development of personality, and practically condemn that person to the sterile efforts of his own feeble will in conflict with powerful, even diabolical forces that are literally hell-bent on distorting the personality. We've got all kinds of fully developed persons, but where the personality has been developed independent of grace. All these people know their mind all right. They make free decisions all right. They know what they want, and they get it. And you cannot fault them for not being a developed person. But a development can be so completely natural as to have produced a person who is a stranger to the function of divine grace. That's the first big thing I wanted to share with you on the development of personality, to make sure that we know that from the very beginning, notice what I did, from the moment of baptism, no less than God had to create an individual soul, and that's different and distinct in each one of us. So the moment we were baptized and God infused the divine life into our souls, the divine life that you and you and you and you and you and you received is not the divine life that I received. Essentially, of course, it's the same. It's the friendship of God. It's the indwelling Trinity. It is the gifts of faith, hope, and charity. But what a difference. Look at the saints compare Dominic Savio, a youngster, with a genius like, say, Thomas Aquinas. Second principle level in the development of personality that Revelation teaches us. And this is the mystery of the incarnation. What does this add to our understanding of person as seen by reason alone? What does faith tell us about person because of the incarnation that we would never have known otherwise? It teaches us that when God became man, he assumed human nature. No question about it. But he remained, watch the verb, he remained a divine person. What are some of the practical consequences in the spiritual life, in the training of ourselves and the formation of others? Three especially. First, it teaches us that this divine person is the source of all the grace that every human person needs to grow in that fullness of himself for which he was created. First lesson, therefore, in personality development from the incarnation, that the divine person who became man is a source of all the grace that every human person needs to grow in that fullness of himself for which we were created. In other words, there is no personality development apart from Christ. Second, that this divine person is the pattern and model for every human person to imitate, and that the more Christ-like we become, the more truly mature persons we become. What's maturity? Everybody is talking about a mature person. Would you please be a little clearer? What's a mature person? A mature person is one who is as much like Christ as the grace that he has received can make him. And this is not piety. This is our faith. There was a human being who was a perfect person. That human being is the norm, the standard, more than model, more than pattern, norm, standard. Insofar as my personality is modeled on his, but he's divine. Yes, my dear, that's the whole point. That's why God became a human being. So that divinity would walk the streets of our earth and show us how we are to grow. And thirdly, that this divine person who became man is the goal and destiny for which all human persons were made. that we have been created to possess and be possessed by Him into the endless reaches of eternity. To repeat, what are the three lessons in personality development that the Incarnation teaches us as regarding our own development and the formation of others? First, that Christ is the source of all the grace that each person needs. Secondly, that Christ is the norm and the standard, the pattern, the model for the development. I am developing only in so far as I becoming like Christ. And no matter what psychology books may tell me to the contrary, I am so far from developing, I am degenerating. Unless my personality is becoming more like Christ's. And thirdly, that this development of personality, though it takes place in time, is not merely for time, it is for eternity. That the more developed we are when, as we say, we die, the more happy we shall be for all eternity. The purpose of personality development on earth is personality beatitude in heaven, because our joys in heaven will be possessed by each separate individual according to the degree of our development when we enter the portals of eternity. What does the mystery of grace add to the concept of person as known to the unrevealed human mind? And that, by the way, is a very good term that I found. The unrevealed human mind may be very rational, very intelligent, but unless it believes, I call it the unrevealed human mind. The mystery of grace tells us that each human being has a second and higher life infused into him by God than the already sublime existence conferred at the moment of conception. We should therefore speak of having not only a supernatural life, but of having a superpersonal individuality. In other words, two things have been elevated, nature and person. It means, on the second level, that each person, at the moment he or she receives the divine life of grace, already has his or her unique, distinctive, human, supernatural spirit. Our personality transformed by Christian standards is therefore individuality twice over. Once because we have our own distinctive, separately created soul, and once again because we have our own distinctive, separately conferred, and different soul of the soul. We all have sanctifying grace, but in no two people, no less than is our nature the same as anyone else's, so our supernature is not the same. Sanctifying grace is not the same in any two people. one consequence in training or directing others is that we should recognize both forms of individuality. First insight. Secondly, both should be developed simultaneously. Develop the individual as a human person, different from others, and develop that individual's supernatural life, which is different from everyone else's. At the risk of what I think I called spiritual schizophrenia. Moreover, Revelation tells us without grace, we do not have the supernatural life, or are we calling for the individual, the superpersonal life. But Revelation also tells us that having this divine life, which is unique for each one of us, we further need grace. And just as the single most important element in the development of the natural person is to develop that person's free will, so the most important thing on the supernatural level is to develop that person's supernatural life by making available to him or her the help of grace. In other words, our supernatural life must continue to be enlightened by grace, supported by grace, and enabled by grace to do things that reason alone could never conceive, or the human will alone could never achieve. One consequence of this is that in the training of religious, we cannot divorce the role of divine grace from the cultivation of an autonomous individual. That would be to deprive a religious of his greatest asset in the development of his individuality, and condemn the person to the sterile efforts of his own feeble will in conflict with powerful, even diabolical forces that are bent, like notes say, hell-bent on distorting its personality.